What? I'm just in my going mode.
Okay. Can everyone on Zoom hear me? Perfect. Okay.
Have you had the console Zoom?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, the committee. I switched out very sneakily, because I realized I had the wrong Zoom link because I still had the cat link.
So.
In a pair of Vita, the agenda has the correct link, so if you want to join Zoom, you can really do it. No worries.
Did you want to repeat that question, or do we just want to be?
Yeah, I can repeat that. So Prometheus, the someone involved in today's meeting, is not currently here. The first few items were shared with him in advance, and it's not something he has a role in speaking to. So I don't know if Council has any thoughts on starting the meeting. I'm just about to send him an email once my laptop starts working. But it's nothing that would be kept from him ultimately.
Does anyone have any strong objection to that? Okay, if not, then we will call this a special meeting of council to order at 5:09 p.m. Thank you everyone for attending. We're just going to begin with the land acknowledgement. So the University of Alberta and the University of Alberta Students Union occupy Indigenous land in Amiskwetcheskayagan and Beavers Hills, House on Treaty 6 territory. From time immemorial, the banks along the river valley have been known as the Pinoan, a meeting place for the Nahiwak, the Nitsapi, Métis, Dene, Ojibwe, Saulteaux, Anishinaabe, Haudenosaunee, and others. The university, the Students Union, and much of the city are located on the unlawfully stolen land of the forcibly removed Apache Cree. We acknowledge that sharing this land gives each of us the responsibility to research the historic context of Treaty 6, to reflect on our personal relationships to the land, the nations we've named, and to our roles in upholding justice on this territory. Since they began, the Students' Union and the university have benefited from historic and ongoing dispossession of land and resources from Indigenous peoples. As a result, it is our responsibility to seek the restitution of this land and its resources. Finally, we seek to do better by working to make our learning, research, and governance align with the histories, languages, teachings, and cultures of First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples in a land presently occupied by the Canadian state. We encourage critical reflection by asking the following question: in relation to the territory on which you are situated, what role do you play in strengthening the resistance and resurgence of Indigenous students within your communities? All right, just as a quick thing, we're just going to begin with attendance. So Christian Fotang. Pedro Almeida. Chris Beasley.
Here.
There. This pen is not working.
I can do either.
Okay, Levi Flamin. Michael Griffiths.
Also here.
Stephen Rates. Ellen Tam. Here, I'm just going to. Mason Peach. Nope. Nathan Teason.
Here.
Muniba Kadir. Amir Muhammad.
Here.
Damon Atwood.
Present.
Elm Alahi.
Here.
Precious Majekadumi.
Present.
Jillian Eisenstadt.
Here.
Noor Abdelwahab.
Here.
Laurel Ford.
Here.
And Megan Garbett. All right, and we have Christian Zukowski and Jacob with us in the room, and I do not see Mark.
Mark just joined.
Oh.
I'm here. I had the wrong link.
All right, so, okay. That is everything then. All right. Okay. All right. So our first item of business on the agenda is to approve the special meeting agenda. So because of the nature of special meetings, we have a modified agenda to address unique business, but it has to be approved by council. So can I have a mover and a seconder for agenda approval put forward by Amir, seconded by Levi? Are there any opposed?
Not opposed, but I do have a suggestion. Like just reading over the presentation slides, if it appears to be just strictly matter of fact and kind of an overview of what the code is, would there be any opposition to moving that ahead of the closed session just because we have the gateway here and just minimize the amount of time we're sitting on the hallway waiting for us? Like if there's no confidential or
I have no personal opposition to this.
I can share my thoughts if you want.
Yes. Oh.
Yeah, there's nothing. Sorry, I should turn on my phone.
Oh, mine's on if you want to use that one.
Oh, sure.
Mail to Adrian.
Okay. There's nothing preventing the slides from being shared. I think the reason we had included it in the closed portion is just for ease of keeping the whole process enclosed. I take your point that it's matter of fact and not specific to the process. I think you could go either way. I don't see any issue keeping it in open.
Is there any other opinions or comments anyone has about this? How do we feel? Do we want to move to presentation?
I'll move to amend it if it fails.
Okay. So what is that motion?
So it's currently moved to approve the agenda for the special meeting with the amendment. Can you just repeat that, Levi?
Just move to reorder 2023-19/3A to be, I don't know, to B maybe? Or to somewhere reorder it in such a way that the presentation occurs before we go in close.
Agenda, so presentation occurs before close session. And you can let me know if that doesn't look right to you.
Where is that?
It is being shared on the Zoom.
Oh, no. That's probably
okay. So that is the motion on the table then. So can I get a new mover seconder? Or can it be the same?
Just a mover seconder for the amendment.
Okay, can I get a mover and a seconder for an amendment put forward by Levi, seconded by Precious? Are there any opposed to this motion? Any abstentions? Okay, recognizing none, then we will approve the agenda with amendments. Okay, so I'm just gonna, all right. So then at this time we'll just move on to the presentation. So I will ask Christian Zukowski to provide a brief presentation on the code of conduct. And this presentation does not make any specific arguments relating to today's appeal, but it's intended to provide counsel with the necessary background to navigate the appeal. And I'll pass it on to Zukowski.
Thank you. I'm just going to share my screen.
We're good to go.
Bear with me.
Yes.
If Christian, if maybe you want to switch to your mic just because you're presenting.
Sure, I'll turn mine off.
Okay, can everyone hear me okay? Okay, I'll take silence as yes. As Adrian kind of mentioned, this is intended to just give you a foundation of what the Student Governance Code of Conduct is. It doesn't really get into the specifics of any complaint. It's just kind of almost like a briefing on what you need to fulfill your role in an appeal. So first off, just an overview of the presentation. There's four main parts of the presentation today. The first goes over the code's purpose and objectives, what the code applies to, what the speaker's role is, and counsel's role in an appeal. In addition to the slide deck, you also received fact sheets. It's basically just the slides in Google Doc form. It just makes it a little easier to navigate the information, and it's a bit of an easier reference. So first, purpose and objectives of the Student Governance Code of Conduct. There's kind of three main objectives that the code sets out. The first is to create, enforce, and protect equitable practices and spaces in UASU governance. The second is to guide and enhance the performance of student representatives in a positive and productive way. The third is to outline firm standards of behavior as statements of principle where necessary. And sorry, Jill, we're having, I'm forgetting what that's called, tech issues. So the slides are just shared over Zoom. No. Okay, so what does the code apply to now that we know its objectives? So I think it's really important to understand student representatives are not bound by the code in all aspects of your lives. Like if you're just sitting on the couch doing things, it's not really applicable unless you're working for a law, in which case it might be. But the code only applies when a student representative is acting as a representative. So what does it mean to act as a representative? I've included a few here. The code kind of gives a big list. I included a link on the fact sheet that takes you right to that list, or it should, fingers crossed. But a few examples are consulting with constituents and other stakeholders, attending meetings of Students' Council and its committees or other university governance bodies, meeting with university staff or government officials, making financial decisions. I wasn't very specific on this one. It's not like personal banking. It's like if you have signing authority for the students' union. When a representative's action or inaction could bring the UASU into disrepute, you're considered to represent the students' union and more, which you can find in the code. So again, when students are acting as representatives, they are required to follow the four ethical standards of behavior in the code. These four are conflict of interest, conflict of duty, not to engage in those things, but actually to safeguard from those. I just took the titles from the code, to have respectful conduct and to maintain confidentiality. But again, what do these mean? So what the code says is a conflict of interest is the real or perceived ability to influence a decision for yourself or for a family member or a partner, someone you have a very close relationship with. A conflict of duty is when a representative is unable to meet their commitments to the students' union because of commitments to some other organization. Respectful conduct just includes using appropriate language, representing all constituents, not impeding UASU processes, and following UASU legislation. And finally, confidentiality is, it's a simplification, but basically it's protecting the sensitive information that a representative might receive. So a violation occurs when two things are present. A student is acting as a representative, as outlined by the code, and one of those standards of ethical behavior are violated. And when you have those two things, you get a violation of the code. It's not super important at this stage, but if the code does proceed to further action, it prioritizes restorative practices by seeking to involve those most harmed in the code's processes, trying to repair harm caused and prevent future harm from occurring, encouraging student representatives to take responsibility for their actions, reintegrating transgressing parties into the governance community if this doesn't cause future harm, encouraging cooperative effort by all parties to a conflict, and maintaining order and building peace. So when a complaint is made, what's the speaker's role? Basically, the speaker reviews the complaints for frivolous, vexatious, trivial, or vindictive elements. We'll get into what those are in a sec. But if such elements are found, the speaker may determine that no further action is required. It's really important to note that the speaker isn't supposed to say, this complaint is true or this is false. It's just kind of looking at, you could think of them as barriers to further action. So what are these elements? This stuff isn't directly in the code, but back in May, I did some research looking at where this kind of language is used, and I took some inspiration from that. So frivolous complaints are may be difficult or impossible to respond to. So for example, if a complaint is like, I'm really, really frustrated with the student representative, but doesn't really say why, it doesn't provide a situation for response. More specifically, it could not even identify how the other party violated the code, or it might not identify how a violation occurred when acting as a representative. So a vexatious complaint, usually the core purpose is to cause trouble or annoyance. It might demand some really crazy things or excessive outcomes. It might use really scandalous or inflammatory language. And it might also make claims that are just outside of the code scope. They may be valid concerns, but it might not be what the code is trying to deal with. Trivial complaints are where a violation may even occur, but the actual impact of it isn't very significant. It doesn't really cause any harm. Finally, a vindictive complaint is an attempt to use the code to retaliate against someone for their actions. So you're unhappy with the decision someone made, and you're trying to punish them with a complaint. So if the speaker identifies any of these elements, they need to decide if further action is required to go to a resolution process. And basically, to make this decision in the kind of framework I created back in May, the speaker considers if further action would achieve the code's purpose and objectives despite those barriers. So this is basically just a reminder of the objectives. Does further action have the potential to restore or protect equitable practices and spaces in student governance? Would further action protect the standards of ethical behavior outlined in the code? Does further action have the potential to repair harm and reduce future harm in the governance community? And then kind of a final overarching question, are the objectives of the code, those three questions, achievable despite frivolous, vexatious, trivial, or vindictive elements? So that's the speaker's role. That's what the speaker has to do. Counsel's role is basically to evaluate how the speaker did their job. So how did this review how the speaker considered the complaint for these frivolous, vexatious, trivial, or vindictive elements, and review how the speaker decided whether or not further action is needed. So reasons to allow an appeal then would be if the speaker incorrectly identified frivolous, vexatious, trivial, or vindictive elements. It's kind of a tongue twister. Or even if they did identify those elements correctly, would further action kind of further the code's objectives despite those barriers? So that's really counsel's role. You're kind of reviewing how I did my job and then making the decision. Just a few things to be aware of. An appeal isn't an opportunity to go wildly beyond the code. Counsel is also still bound by the code of conduct and the kind of standards that it sets. It establishes standards for ethical behavior. I would argue that the code is not a forum for disagreement on policy. It really, when you look at those standards of ethical behavior, they're very kind of individual conduct rather than, do you think tuition should increase or decrease or that kind of thing. How you represent your constituents' views is another matter, but and if you do see things that you think could be improved, I would suggest that the kind of appropriate forum for that is to contact bylaw committee. This is the first time this sort of appeal is being held, so you may notice things that you would like to change, but just kind of bracket those for now. That's the end of my presentation. I think we're running a little short on time. I'll leave it to the chair if he wants to allow any questions.
Are there any pressing or diehard questions at this time? Sorry. By anyone? Damon?
Thanks. I just wanted to clarify something about this policy. When I looked at... So I'll just pull it up here again. When I looked at it, it says when you're making complaints, according to the policy, only student representatives can actually make complaints. Is that correct?
No, that's a good question, Damon. part of this was just kind of a procedural miscommunication. In conversations we've had with students, it was indicated that the code of conduct was an option for them. Given that that was indicated as an option, we, as individuals, we felt uncomfortable saying no once that was provided as an option. So I apologize to council for that miscommunication. If that's a serious concern that might kind of moot this whole issue, again, it's up to council. But yeah, I don't know. I suspect that maybe isn't a satisfactory answer in your eyes, but it's kind of the answer and the situation that we're in.
Well, I mean, I can't help but think that we can't really hear an appeal of a decision made in respect to a complaint by a person who didn't have standing to bring a complaint in the first place. So I mean, if we want to do it, I guess, but it doesn't seem to be very compliant with the existing rules.
Yeah, and this is ultimately something.
Sorry, the two mic system is really confusing to me. Ultimately, like, yes, this is something council can discuss more in closed session when it decides, like, the motion deciding the appeal comes at the very end of this whole process. Whether council wants to make a decision now or later is up to you. The other thing I'd note is the complainant isn't here, and I haven't heard from them via email, so that's just another
sorry, so quick point of order. Do you want to just turn the volume off? Quick point of order, can the, like, I think it probably would have been a really good idea to establish whether this should have gone through or had standing ahead of time. Having said that, that seems like a discussion that should be happening. I don't think any of the discussion about the case specifically should be happening in open right now. It's more for Adrian, I think. I can't hear anyone if I'm...
I was muted. That's my bad. If council would like, then we can move into closed session then. So to move into closed session, I will require a mover and two seconders for the motion. Can I get a mover and two seconders? Moved by Amir. Do I have two seconders? Precious as the first one and Laurel as the second one. Great. Thank you, everyone.